Welcome to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. And you're with myself, Karen Morton, and Paul Couchman, the Regency cook. The Food and Drink Show is sponsored by Brighton Gin, and they have been gleefully supporting publicans who have been opening their doors to us to welcome us back to outdoor spaces, of course, and getting them all ready to serve lots of Brighton Gin. And in the name of supporting local venues, they have decided that the cocktail of the month here on the Food and Drink Show is going to be from the lovely folks at the Flint House Restaurant Wine Bar. If you haven't been there in the lanes of Brighton, you must make it a must. And on their menu at the moment, they have a cocktail called Simply the Flint. And it's a mix of both Seaside Strength and Pavilion Strength Brighton Gin, as well as rock, dry vermouth and lemon oils. Oh, doesn't that sound so refreshing? Such a summery cocktail. And I must say that I must go down there myself and give the Flint a taste made of the wonderful blend of Brighton Gins. Now, we're at that time of year, you'll see green shoots and beautiful little white flowers, which suggests that the wild garlic is prevalent around our forest floors and indeed our gardens. And it literally does spring up anywhere and everywhere. Paul, you have been foraging for wild garlic. Where did you get yours?
So every evening we go for a sort of walk, me and Matt. We managed to find some. So that it really likes somewhere that's a bit shady and quite moist. So I really went looking for it, and we found what I thought was wild garlic. So there's a story to that as well. I mean, I have used it in a recipe, and it was delicious, and it does taste like garlic. But I posted a picture of it on Twitter, and I got this whole conversation going with people who said it actually wasn't wild garlic. It was actually three-cornered leek, which is something else. So there we go. So I've gone into the I've got this wonderful history book about it all. And yeah, it does seem that there are lots of different types of plants which people do call wild garlic. But there is one particular one that is supposed to be the real wild garlic.
I think it is quite often it's the smell when you get when you're walking yeah. past that you get that. And you don't get it with the, as you said, the three-cornered leek. Yeah. And I actually have that I'd picked and growing in my garden. And it's just when you chew the leaf, that's where the difference is. You notice that it doesn't have as garlicky a taste, but it still is equally delicious when you toss it in a little bit of oil. And you have been you've been cooking with yours, yeah. And I know that we're going to join you in the kitchen with that. So tell us what the recipe has been that you followed.
So I mean the recipe, I'll go for it more in the recording, but it is basically making a sort of pesto with it. So you're using quite a lot of it, and the trick in this recipe is to put it in the oven first. So you put quite a slow oven, and you just take some of the liquid out of it. And then you use that with oil, with some pine nuts to make a pesto. So I grind that up. And then I've added some fresh leaves with that as well. So a real intense flavour. And I loved it. It was really good. I mean, I'd love to know how it tastes with the different wild garlic, you know, because the one I used was, well, as you said, it's probably a bit milder, but it was still very delicious. Mm-hmm. And I did it with some broccoli, some mushrooms, some chestnut mushrooms, and some fresh peas as well, frozen ones, and for pasta, and it was really good.
That combination really does work very well, and it has that lovely summery feel. So I think without further ado, Paul, let's go into your kitchen. And listeners, if you have your pen and paper handy, you can jot down all the things Paul is doing as he's making this wonderful dish with wild garlic.
So I'm making some pasta, pasta with wild garlic sauce. And you find me in my kitchen now. First step is I've got the wild garlic that I collected. I'm going to drizzle some oil over it and some salt. And I'm going to put that in the oven for 10 minutes. The oven's on about 100. So while the wild garlic is in the oven, I'm going to put on some water to boil with some salt in it for the pasta. So this recipe is quite clever because we're going to use the same pan of water to boil the broccoli, which I'm going to sort of almost cook. I'm going to take it out when it's still a little bit tender. And once I've cooked the broccoli, then I can add the pasta into the water. And towards the end of the cooking time of the pasta, I'm going to actually put the peas in. So it's all quite easy using the same pan. Before I put the stalks into the water, I'm just going to cut them in half just to make them a bit thinner. Because some of these stalks are a bit too thick. So I basically want everything about the same thickness so it will cook in the same time. But I'm going to put them in whole at the moment and then chop them up when they're cooked. So I'm just slicing down the middle. And they're nice, they're beautiful, they're, so they're really purple. That sort of dark purple. A dark green, and they look beautiful. And it's beginning, I mean, it's a beautiful day today. It's beginning to feel like spring. It's cold, but really clear, beautiful sunlight. And this meal is sort of just what the sort of food you want there. So it's, well, it's comforting, you know, because there's pasta in it. It's got all these lovely spring flavours, you know, peas, broccoli, there's some mushrooms in there. And of course, the beautiful wild garlic, which I was really lucky to find. Really likes quite moist temperatures. Well, temperatures. It likes really like moist environments. It likes it to be cool. So it usually prefers shady woodland. And where I picked it from, you could actually feel how moist the air was. And it was when you started feeling how moist the air was, that's when I discovered it. So my water's just coming to boil now. We hear it. So I've added some salt. I might pop a little bit more salt in, actually. So the broccoli is going to take about 5 to 6 minutes. Just bring it up to a proper boil. So I've got a timer for the garlic. That, as I said, the garlic's in the oven. It's been covered with olive oil and some salt. And it's a really low temperature. It's only 100 in the oven. So I'm just going to take out some of the moisture, intensify the flavours a bit. The pasta I'm using, and I can't say this properly, I'll get all this wrong, it's an Italian concigiloni. What they basically are, those very big shell-like pastas. So they look like big open shells. And they've gone into the green water now. And the pasta's going to take... yeah, probably about 8 minutes, 7 to 8 minutes. I'll check the pack actually. I'm also going to, I've got some pine nuts here as well, and I'm going to just lightly toast them. The thing about pine nuts, you probably know this, but you really got to watch them because they burn very quickly. So I just want to very lightly toast them to get the flavours out as well. It's the same thing with everything we're doing here. We're trying to bring out the best flavours of, you know, the mushrooms, trying to bring out the flavours of the broccoli, the pine nuts. And the garlic, the wild garlic, that's toasting away in the oven to get the flavour out of that. And it will char a little bit as well, which is good. What I'm doing now is taking the broccoli that I cooked, just slightly cooling off now, chopping it into pieces, and that's going to go in with the mushrooms that have just been cooking in olive oil. So they go together. And then I'm going to take a lemon. I just want the zest of a whole lemon. So what we're going to do is take the roast wild garlic that's in the oven. So that's, you know, that's a bit drying out, a bit charring. That's going to go into my blender with lemon zest, with some olive oil, some pine nuts, about a tablespoon of pine nuts, and put some chili flakes as well in there. A teaspoon, it says, well, in the original recipe it was tahini, but I don't have that, so I'm going to just put a tiny bit of peanut butter. Actually, it's going to sound a bit odd, but it will just give an extra savoury note, because this is actually a vegan dish, but it's going to taste really good because of all the nuts and the, you know, all these different flavours I'm putting into it. So that's about enough of that. So that's a lemon, the zest of a whole lemon. So that's going into my little blender. I'm putting in 50 ml of olive oil. There you go. Just going in. So I'm going to grab from the oven now, which should be ready. These are the white garlic. So they've gone right down. And they look like, if you haven't seen them before, they're just... They look like pieces of grass, really. You know, quite thick pieces of grass. And they smell just really garlicky. And, of course, they're really lovely and oily now as well. So they're going in quite hot. Just slightly crispy. It looks amazing. Right, they're going in. I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to add a bit of peanut butter. Just probably... Just a teaspoon, really. That would just give, like I said, a savoury note to it. Just go for the list of ingredients. Lemon juice. So it's about a half. I'm just gonna squeeze in about half a lemon. Pop the chilli flakes in now. And these are optional, obviously. If you don't like, you can leave them out, but I like them. So they're going in. And I've reserved some of the wild garlic. It just hasn't gone in the oven. You know, there's about five pieces of that. So I'm going to make a bit of noise now. You can probably hear that. I'm just making a sort of pesto, really. Think about it. Let's put the nuts in there. Forget those. So a tablespoon of these pine nuts are going in there as well, which I'm probably getting blended up. Now, at this stage, you can add a tiny bit more oil if you think it needs it. I think I'm just going to put a bit more oil in. Oh, that looks amazing. So it's a very sort of, creamy looking sauce. I blend it a bit more. It's a bit like mushy peas, you know, that sort of colour. Lovely. Very nice. And that's actually going to go in with the mushrooms and the broccoli. It's the pan now. I'm just trying to scrape all of it in. Lovely. Smells amazing. So I've got another 2 tablespoons of pine nuts that I'm just going to put in as they are. And I'm going to put in a tiny bit of lemon juice just to jazz it all up, really. And of course a bit of salt. Though I'm going to put some parmesan in, so again, if you're going to use lots of parmesan, you don't need so much salt, but you know that. So I just go through the quantities of everything while I'm finishing up. So for the roast wild garlic sauce, you'll need about 20 wild garlic leaves, 50 mils of olive oil, the zest of 1 lemon, 2 tablespoons of pine nuts, and I did a teaspoon of peanut sauce. Oh, sorry, what's it called? Peanut butter. If you've got peanut butter, you can use tahini if you do have it. And half, I put in about half a lemon as well. And then the rest of the ingredients, you've got 100 grams of broccoli, 200 grams of the pasta, you know, the shell pasta, a tablespoon of olive oil, 150 grams of chestnut mushrooms, another tablespoon of pine nuts. And the other thing I haven't mentioned yet is 100 grams of frozen peas. So I'm putting those in now. I'm just heating everything up. So the mushrooms, the broccoli, and the sauce, that's all just getting heated up to go over the pasta in a minute when the pasta's ready. Get the hellies up. So I'm just putting it. There we go. So that's my pasta. I'm getting hungry then. So just tasting some of the sauce that I'm not using. And it's amazing, because what you're getting is all these tastes that are combining, so you can't really taste the individual ingredients. The peanut butter is very clever, because it makes it taste really creamy. So you'd swear there was actually cream in this recipe. Of course there isn't. No, it's really delicious. Perfect meal for a spring evening. Right, so the pasta's ready, just going to drain it now. Adding that to the sauce in the same frying pan. Just giving it a stir. So I've In the meantime, I've made some rocket salad. What I've done with that, it's really nice, actually. I've just put some olive oil on the bottom of the bowl. Added to that a battered of pomegranate molasses. And put some salt on it. And just tossed in the rocket together in that dressing. What's good about that is the pomegranate molasses is quite sweet and the rocket is quite bitter, so they marry very well together. So one enhances the other. So I've just put some plates out. I'm going to put a bit of the rocket salad, some of the pasta next to it. I'm going to sprinkle over some Parmesan cheese and then I'm going to eat it. So thanks for listening. I really recommend this recipe. It's going to be lovely. Okay.
So, Paul, that all sounded rather lovely, and I can't wait to try it for myself. What in particular did you sort of find that you enjoyed most about making that recipe?
Well, you know what I like most about these sort of things is you're using something that's free. You know, you're going into the woodland, picking something, and then turning it into something delicious. And it's all stuff you've collected yourself. And that's what I love so much about it. And also, it feels a bit like spring when you're eating and when you're cooking with it, you know? Because when we bought it, we collected it from the woods, and there's this lovely feeling about taking something home and then using it. No, it was delicious. I've got a few. This was quite funny because I did look up the. It's got lots of different names for it. And some of them are lovely, but some of them aren't so nice. I mean, it wasn't as loved by everyone. So some of the most horrible names actually are, we've got Snake's Food, Stinking Jenny, Stinking Lilies, and Onion Stinkers.
Oh my goodness. And I noticed that on your social media feed, actually. I got a little notification about that, which made me smile. But it's funny because I suppose, you know, it is quite pungent as a smell. Mm. And it isn't something you'd go, it doesn't have a sweet smell, but it has got an aroma all of its own. So it clearly wasn't very popular in the past then.
As garlic wasn't popular for a long period as well, and people used to find that stinky and weren't very keen on using it. So I think that's what it's got. I mean, the nicest name I like is Badger's Garlic. I think that sounds really sweet, doesn't it?
Oh, that's delightful. Now, how would that be different, or the Badger's Garlic?
Oh, it's all just the same names for the same thing. So there's just all these different names for exactly the same thing.
And would that depend on where you lived?
Exactly. So the ones I gave the... You know, the Stinking Jenny and stuff. They're from Somerset.
Ah, you see. So that's it. So the names, depending on where you lived in the country, somebody would give it its own name. So that's so delightful. I've just recently learned as well, too, that there is a wonderful garlic farm on the Isle of Wight. And they not only produce sort of the garlic bulb seedling that you can order by post and have delivered so that you can grow garlic in your garden, but they do wonderful sauces. And would you believe garlic beer?
Oh, I've not heard of that.
Have you
tasted it?
I'm going to order it though, Paul. But I happened to be watering my plants and my lovely new neighbours over the wall were doing some planting. And one of them was one of these garlic bulbs. And they have actually tasted the beer and some other sauces that they say they rave about from this source. So it's all, you know, organic, beautifully farmed. And I thought, I'm so intrigued. So I can't wait to order some garlic beer. So that's something we'll have to look forward to. They said it doesn't taste of garlic, but it does have its own flavour, you know, as a beer. But certainly they seem quite happy about it. So I think that's something worth trying. But look them up. And it is the garlic farm. So I've never heard of a garlic farm outside of France, really, I think. So that's quite exciting, isn't it, to go and take a look. And listeners, you may want to do the same thing as well. Something delicious. I mean, gosh, I just don't know what my kitchen would be like if I didn't have garlic. It just brings out the flavour in so many dishes, doesn't it? And it's quite a humble ingredient, Paul.
Yeah, and my favourite, I mean, we're talking about the taste. My favourite way of using it, actually, there's a recipe, I think it's called 60 clove garlic or something. And what you do in that case, you cook it very long and slow in a stew. And it doesn't have the ferocity of when you cook garlic, you know, just short. So it really blends and it really mellows. It's a sort of Portuguese dish because they used it a lot. And it's lovely, really delicious.
Do keep in touch with us here at the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb, which has been specially produced by us at Tasty Radio Brighton. And if you would like to look at our social media feed and get in touch with us about your ideas, your restaurants, your pubs, your wonderful recipes that you've made yourself, and you'd like to be a guest on the show, please contact us here at Radio Reverb. You can also see us at Tasty Radio Brighton on Instagram and on Facebook. There's nothing nicer than going exploring into the countryside. So I left my home in Hove and I headed for the village of Cookfield. The reason for that is that there's something new and exciting for people who are local there, but also to those of us who want something a little bit different and a day out. I spoke to Siobhan Stagg-Harding, who is the joint proprietor of the Talbot in Cookfield. And as well as being a pub restaurant, they have turned their premises into something quite exciting. Let's hear from Siobhan now. Now, Siobhan, it's so exciting because I know you so well, and you live in Hove, but of course, nestled in the heart of the village in Cookfield, you have the Talbot, which was a pub. It is a pub. It is a restaurant. But now you're doing something completely different. Tell us what that is.
Well, we've decided to open up our own deli in the pub. We felt that it's something that we can bring to the village that is in great need. They don't have anything like that here. And lots of pubs and restaurants are trying to think on their feet as well to, you know, develop new ideas within a business within a business. And we have to say the Tom Kerridge program really inspired us to go forth and do this during lockdown.
Oh, well, and what was it about his program, you know, that you thought, gosh, we could do that too?
It was about utilizing dead spaces, really, and using an area where probably didn't bring as much income in as it stood. I mean, we've been able to develop the deli area in a space that, okay, we've lost 8 covers, but it's also enabled us to create a bigger income from that small space. And we're lucky enough to have an upstairs area now where we can extend our restaurant into. And we've also refurbished our garden area, so it's undercover. We can get more covers out there as well. And we just feel that it's a great thing to do and bring to the village for people.
Well, it's so exciting because there's that, do you know, there's something lovely about a deli with an affordable luxury, was said to me the other day concerning chocolates. And it's so true. There's something about a deli where you're just trying out new flavours. And also, I see that you're stocking a lot of local produce as well. So, you know, sort of not only English, but also Sussex and home counties. So what sort of things have you got on your shelves?
Well, we've got Horsham Gingerbread, which is a very old bakehouse. It's been established in Horsham since the, goes back to...
Let's have a look, we've got a pack here, haven't we? 200 years?
Yeah, 200 years. And their gingerbread is exceptional. I have to say, it's been flying off the shelves. It's quite a spicy, oaty gingerbread.
I've got some here, yeah, haven't I, to try, which is lovely. And I mean, I think that's great recommendation because, I mean, you are a chef, you know, and so therefore you do know your food.
Yes, and I have to say it's exceptional.
Gosh, you're definitely getting the spices come through there.
And candied. It's got candied peel in it as well, and it's got a dark treacle in it as well.
It is a very dark gingerbread, and you're not used to seeing that.
No.
You are getting the treacle notes, and the ginger, the spice, a little kick at the back of the throat when you finish it.
It's quite fiery,
It's delightful, isn't it? It's something really special.
Yeah.
And so the Horsham Gingerbread Bakehouse, so that's lovely that you've got that stocked here, and the little tasters for us on the counter that if you go to the deli at the Talbot, you can try out some new things. And I think that's the other lovely thing about when you go to a deli, there's always maybe a little treat to taste, isn't it? So it just enhances the experience.
Exactly. And people like to be introduced to new things that they possibly haven't tried before, exactly for that reason.
Yeah.
And it encourages them to just try different things.
I love it. I love it. Now, you've got your wines and you've got breads and you've got the gingerbread and biscuits. There's all sorts here. But what is also very exciting is you're now making and selling your own chutneys. So tell us about these, because I'm very excited because I have had your homemade chutneys over the last few Christmas, so I know how good they are. By the way, my jar's run out.
Okay.
So tell us about the selection now we have here in front of us, because it is very exciting.
Right. So last summer we grew so many different chilies and we had so many courgettes from the allotments. And we decided that we were going to start making our own produce for ourselves and our friends to begin with. And everyone was blown away by it, and I have to say. So we thought, well, actually, why don't we make it and sell it when we open our deli? So we've got sauces, which are excellent, that can be added to dishes or casseroles or drizzled onto pastas or dipped, which are... Yeah, predominantly chili-based.
I wasn't thinking, actually, about the drizzling over pasta. That's a lovely idea. So you can have a really quick supper.
Yes.
And I noticed, you've got the gluten-free pasta range.
Yes,
which
we have.
Very exciting. Yes. I've got a bag of that there. So the chili pimenton. And then you've got the chili and pineapple and mango. Sort of a mustardy flavour.
Yeah, it's a bit Caribbean as well. Oh. So that goes nice with, you know, if you wanted to do just a stir-fry jambalay kind of rice dish, chicken based dish, it goes with anything like that. You're welcome to try these actually and see what you think.
Great. Yeah. And I can just see as well, because I think too, you know, if you've got really good sausages, it's just an alternative to having your tomato ketchup or your
absolutely
brand sauce, isn't it?
It's got a twist,
you know, that's going there.
I mean, this is also particularly good, the courgette one, which goes really nice with cold meats, curries, things like pork pie, scotch eggs.
Well, that's right. So that's the spiced courgette chutney. And I think as well, too, because coming into that April phase and we are from April 12th going to be able to be outside, But the whole idea about pies and the Scotch eggs and everything, it's quite nice to have something like that in your sort of little picnic, really,
yes,
isn't it, for your
yes.
outdoor eating. So that's lovely. Now, you've also got the another chutney is the fiery fig. So you really are using up your chilies here. And that's another lovely thing, isn't it, whenever you're growing your own produce. So what else is going into that now that kind of makes it an extra special chutney?
Well, it's a nice sweet fig chutney. I mean, we try to not put too many ingredients, so you predominantly taste the flavours that are in it. There's three different things in it, really. So you've got the figs, the chilli, and then you've got your vinegars and spice. So it goes really well with a hard cheese, that one in particular. It goes really nice with a strong cheddar or, you know, a lot of our products are utilising chilies. It's one of a favourite of ours, I have to say. We'll also later on be producing like a cheese board chutney, which is got a kind of more of an everyday, you know, having a sandwich kind of cheese as well.
That's a nice idea.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's lovely supporting English and if we can support Sussex cheeses. So if we were to have the fiery fig chutney, you were saying like a hard cheddar, but is there a particular English cheese?
Yes, I think Old Sussex is good. It actually go really well with the scrumpy cheese as well, which has got herbs and garlic in it.
Oh.
Yes.
So now we've got the red onion and chilli. There's something about onions, isn't there?
Caramelised onion. Really nice with the soft breeze. There's particularly the brie that has the blue vein in it. It goes beautifully with that as well. You know, I mean, I think sometimes, you know, there's no set way with any of these. I think, you know, people can mix and match and you know, everyone's taste is different.
Yeah,
so,
different.
You know.
It's just lovely to sort of add a little dollop to your sweet or savoury plate, which is nice, isn't it? You're adding that sweetness to your savoury plate. And the good old pickled onion.
Well,
It's not just a pickled onion.
There's a lot of love gone into those onions, you know. A lot of love gone into making that jar of pickled onions. And it has been delicately spiced with chilli, of course.
Mm-hmm.
A hint of chilli. Again, ploughmans, pork pies, you know, anything like that. Cold cut meats. Perfect, and it's traditional, so
What is it about the British and pickled onions?
I know it's I mean, I remember them from my childhood, and it is kind of an old English tradition, isn't it? But people still love them, and I think you can't beat a homemade pickled onion.
There's just a difference in the flavourings coming out. So I'm so tempted by all of these. And then we're coming to your marmalade. I mean, I had a go at making marmalade and I got my Seville oranges, and it was great fun to do.
Yes.
Of course, the smell was amazing.
Yes.
But you've had high acclaim for your particular one, for the Talbot Deli here that you have made. What is it about your marmalade then?
It's quite a tart marmalade, so I haven't put too much sugar in it. The setting point is slightly higher, but it means you can put less sugar in it, and it keeps it really tart. Somebody's commented on it already and said that we should get it licensed.
Wow.
That they feel that, you know, it would be a really good seller on a wholesale basis, but... We at the moment we're going to keep everything small batch because we don't want to run before we can walk. We want to be able to, at the moment, you know, do enough for ourselves, for local business as well, and we'll take it from there.
I think it's very exciting and absolutely perfect whenever, you know, you are restaurateurs, you are, you know, come from catering background, and then to be able to bring this produce in a retail fashion off the shelf is a wonderful thing. So what are your hopes and aspirations moving forward with the deli?
Well, We're going to have on our website a hamper service that we offer to people as well. So if people want something a little bit special, we do postal orders as well for people. So that's being developed at the moment. We're also going to offer things like garden boxes for people. So because the way forward at the moment with the virus is meeting up in gardens and meeting in outdoor spaces. And we thought it'd be a nice idea, if you're going to visit someone in their garden, to take them a garden box so you can have a choice of your nice bits and pieces, you know, whether it be cheese or charcuteries or beers. We've got some beautiful beers that we they're all from Kent. That Shepherd Neame beers, and they do beautiful artisan beers or craft beers as such, and do snack boxes. So Friday night in for the children, maybe some yummy popcorn and some nice little picky bits, because a lot of parents struggle with what to give the children every evening or at the weekends, and they want a bit of a break sometimes as well. Yeah, that's the way forward at the moment, I think, with our deli.
And that was Siobhan Stagg-Harding from the Talbot Pub, Restaurant and now deli in the heart of the Sussex countryside, Cookfield. Now let's go back and join Paul to see what else he's been getting up to. Now, Paul, one of the things, of course, is you will be very busy at the moment in your allotment. So what actually is ready and in season right now?
So, I mean, basically, it's all the stuff we planted last year. Have I talked about my parsnips already? I feel like I've told everyone about them.
No, you haven't told us about your parsnips, Paul. Please tell us about your parsnips.
So they went in just before the pandemic hit, so back in March 2020. And they've been sitting in the ground getting bigger and bigger. And we harvested them a few weeks ago, and there were loads and loads of them. So I put that up. I don't know if you saw the picture, but there was a great big pile of them. So I've frozen all of those.
Amazing.
There was cabbage as well, which, again, I've managed to chop up and freeze as well. So basically, I've picked everything there is to pick. And now we're just planting stuff. There's rhubarb coming up, and that's the main thing that's there. But you get in allotment terms now, it's the fallow period where we're just waiting for the seeds to germinate. And of course, it's been a bit cold, hasn't it? So it's all slowed down a bit recently. But cross my fingers, in a few months' time, what we'll have is things like broad beans, because we've planted lots of those. Early salads, we'll get some radishes we've planted. The onions will start taking off, you know, so there will be lots of lovely things like that to enjoy. And beetroot as well, which I really want to do this year, a lot of. So fingers crossed anyway.
And what is brand new this year that you're going to plant in the allotment?
So we're going to try some different coloured beetroots, because you get those orange ones and pink ones. And there's one that's got sort of white and pink stripes that I want to try. So I'm going to go for sort of ornamental things. What was the other thing? There was a flower. I can't remember the name of it now. There's a little yellow flower that I'm growing for actually to use to make a drink. Yeah, so that's a real experiment. And we're putting in a few more fruit trees later on as well.
That's something, I want to do the same thing. Do you plant, you know, I'm not an expert at all about growing fruit trees. Is there any tips that I should be looking for when I'm off to buy my fruit trees, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it's later, so we're planning, but it will be in autumn that we actually put them in. What we have got is trees we started off 2 years ago, and they should be now actually going to be produce fruit this year. So we're really hoping we're going to get damsons, because it's my favourite fruit. So the blossom is forming now.
Oh.
So we just hope. So damsons and plums. So we've had to wait a few years until actually, you know, they've actually produced enough blossom to produce enough fruit. So I just hope, because it's my favourite fruit, Damson's.
Well, really I've lovely. Learned something new now that is your favourite. In my previous garden, it did take about 3 years until I got plums, and then they became abundant. I was very sad to move, that I couldn't sort of take the tree with me. I was very tempted, but I thought it would be awful if I damaged the roots or something. So I'll have to start all over again.
And when you move them, you have to start all over again anyway. Once you move them, they take another 3 years to establish again.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, gosh. Yeah. Oh, well, then I'm glad I've left it then, and everybody else can enjoy the fruit of my labours, waiting and watching for it to come about. Now, you mentioned parsnips, and I take it you might have a nice recipe to share with us today on the Food and Drink Show, Paul.
Well, you know what great is, because I put this up on my Twitter, and I said, you know, have you got any things I can do with parsnips that, you know, isn't parsnip soup and stuff, which I know all those parsnips. And someone suggested this recipe, which is basically you cut your parsnips into very thin, almost leaves, like with a potato slicer, you know, one of those peelers. So you sort of peel shreds of parsnip off. And then you roast those in some oil, or just fry those in some oil, shallow fry, until they're soft and crispy. And then, it's pine nuts. I think it was basil, but I might use some other salad leaves. I'm not sure which. I mean, it would go well with the wild garlic as well, with a bit of ricotta, and then with pasta.
Lovely.
As a lunch. And I thought that sounded really good.
Sounds delicious. And because there's such flavour of parsnips when they're cooked. You know, you've got that sweet earthiness, which I think the two together is a wonderful combination. And you've got texture. I just love a roast parsnip myself. I just love it. And in fact, over roast potatoes, I think I'd be quite happy just with some roasted parsnips. So they're just beautiful. Today, on my travels, I noticed some white sweet potato. That's not something you see readily available. So I'm going to be experimenting with some of those, actually.
I've never used it, so I'm very interested to see if that tastes any different.
Yeah, so I will let you know, but I was intrigued by it. And this is the joy of when you go walk about now that the shops are opening properly and able, you know, food producers as well are able to put their wares out on the street. And there's that market feel, you know. So I was walking, coming down Boundary Road, and it was a sort of a Turkish greengrocer. So I was excited, you know, just to see some of the varieties. And it's just so nice now to be able to go in and out of a shop. How are you finding the experience, Paul, since opening on Monday 12th?
We haven't actually been out yet. I've been keeping quite local, but I really intend to go, because I need some stuff for the kitchen. And there's a lovely, Nisbets. Nisbets sell catering stuff, so they're on London Road. And I'm desperate for a proper plug-in pair of scales. So this is going to be my first trip out to a shop to buy some scales, because I've got those ones you have batteries in.
Yes.
And they keep breaking off me because I use them so much. So I want a proper plug-in scales, you know, that will stay on all the time. It even has a little battery in it as well. So you plug it in, charge it, and then you can move it around.
Oh, great. So you definitely need that, Paul. Yes, you need proper scales for sure. But no, it has been lovely. And also, I do understand your reservation with going out and just to take it slowly. And I think that's what people will have to do. For me, I did go out on April the 12th. I booked a table at the Stoneham. And along with a friend and colleague of mine, we had a pizza and we shared a very delicious bottle of rosé wine. But it was just to say we were there, you know, we went out, and thankfully they had the canopy. And of course, it has been very cold, but with a couple of heaters on as well, too, we were absolutely fine. We did well that night. And I very much hope that all the publicans are beginning to do well. It's a tricky balance, isn't it, for them? Because you are catering out in the elements. Not everyone has got covered in booths. And of course, you can only take so many people. And you're turning people round on a regular basis within your restaurant. So the good thing is they're able to sell food. And I think the key probably is keeping it simple in your menu. Certainly now where I went to at the Stoneham, they kept it simple. It was a variety of burgers or pizzas. I'm looking forward to trying some other venues out just to see how they're doing. But certainly our guests from Cookfield on the show today talking about their deli. And they've just been saying to me, Dean and Siobhan, that it's actually the Talbot in Cookfield has been, you know, really busy since Monday. And they have made good use of the new sort of outdoor facilities that they built, because it's been quite an investment for a lot of publicans and restaurateurs, you know, sort of taking the outdoor space and turning it round. So not only have they had the loss over lockdown, you know, of revenue, but, you know, having to reinvest in their properties, it's quite something, Paul, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I tell you what we did do last night, which you probably like. So it is a bit, it's probably a bit old fashioned now, but we ordered from a restaurant in London. They do deliveries, so they deliver a menu to you and you cook it yourself. And we had a steak night. So there's a place called Quality Chop House in London. It's on Farringdon Road. And they sent us, it comes in a lovely big black box. And everything is in little pots with their logos on it. And we had, should I just tell you what we had?
Oh, I mean, please,
yes. It was very delicious. So they did some sourdough bread with some butter and smoked cod's roe, which is delicious. Mm. And sprinkled over that was a cured egg yolk.
Really?
So that, yeah. And that looks so pretty. It's all on my Instagram, by the way. The starter was rabbit, pork and apricot terrine with mustard and pickle. So you get one slice of that, which is delicious. And then we had a really big Highland bone-in sirloin steak that Matt cooked, actually. He did it beautifully. And they served it with asparagus and courgette, which they sort of grill for you and then vacuum pack. So you just finish it off in hot water. And they did this confit potato that was amazing, and a Dijon dressing. That was all delicious. Best steak I've ever had, actually. And they, to finish, we had a chocolate mousse, which was served with cherries, which had so much kirsch sprinkled over them. They were so alcoholic. And to finish that, there was a little white chocolate, vanilla and brown butter fudge.
Wow.
So it's delicious.
What a box. Mm. Now, tell us again the details, because you're attempting, because I have been doing, you know, a lot of these delivery boxes, you know, and cook in your kitchen. I found I've much preferred that than going to supermarkets over lockdown. But tell me, where did you get this again from in London, and how much is the box?
Oh, I think it was quite expensive. I think it might have been £100, because I think we bought wine as well with it.
Yes.
So it is equivalent to going out to the restaurant in a way. But that's kind of how it felt. It felt quite special. Yeah, it's the Quality Chop House there in London, in Farringdon Road. And it's a really old-fashioned, it's sort of old-fashioned English cooking, but then with a twist. Mm. And they've been selling from their delicatessen, which is next door, right through the whole of lockdown, actually. And it's the restaurant I want to go to the most when we finish all of this, when we get to go to London. I've always wanted to go there. I've got the book, actually, so I can create some of the dishes.
Yeah. Wonderful. And how did you hear about them originally?
Well, I don't know. There's the restaurant critic of the Sunday Times. It's her favourite restaurant, and she mentioned it once. And that's when I got the book, and that's when I found out about their website, yeah.
How fantastic. Well, I'm going to look them up now myself, because that all sounds wonderful. And I think this is what you're doing. I mean, if you're going to pay for quality, you're wanting something that isn't what you would usually cook yourself. And it feeds your curiosity as well, too, doesn't it? About, gosh, how do they do that? So very clever, very clever. I like that a lot. So you've been having a wonderful time. Now, as well as cooking with wild garlic, you have been up to something brand new, which involves being in a kitchen. And tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, a Clubhouse is a new social media app. Basically, it's audio only. There's no pictures or anything. And basically, you're talking to lots of people all over the world simultaneously. It's like a telephone chat in a way. Some of the rooms, and they're called rooms, are very large, and you might have 200, 300 people in them. And you have a sort of stage where people talk, or people have access. People who are talking have access to the stage, say. But in the smaller rooms, everyone can join in. And that's kind of the rooms we do. So 8 o'clock every weekday, from Monday to Friday, I go in with a friend of mine called Avni, and she's in London. And we talk about food, and people come in from all over the world, actually. So we have regulars now. We have people from New York. We've got a wonderful girl from Iran. And we've had people from China, California. It's quite international. For Hawaii was the most interesting one, actually. So people come in and we chat about food. It's an hour long. And what's great about it is I'm just getting loads and loads of food tips, really. You know, I'm sharing stuff. People sharing things. And it's all live. You know, some people are still asleep, you know, or, you know, they're just about to go to bed and we're just getting up. Yeah, it's incredible.
So it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Now tell us a little bit more about how it works. So have you got any kind of plan when you rock up into the room about what you're going to talk about? I mean, how does it come about? Do you have a theme?
Sometimes we do themes, yeah. We've talked about things like chocolate. We've talked about breakfast. You know, they're quite loose themes. The idea is that the theme would provoke conversation. And so we just encourage everyone to chip in and say things and share their knowledge. And I've just learned lots of stuff that I didn't, you know, I had no idea about. One of my favorite things I learned is something called Loco Moco, which is breakfast in Hawaii. Have you heard of that before?
I have, because, I mean, there's a song that's after that, and it will have appeared in movies as well, too. But tell us more about the breakfast.
So it's a lovely sort of hamburger they do, and they serve it with a sort of mushroom gravy that they make as well. It's served everywhere, apparently, in Hawaii. So you can get it really high end, or you can get it one of these little shacks, you know, that serve it as well. So the rich eat it, the poor eat it. It's a various state of refinement when you eat it. So I did try, and it was delicious. It was really, really good.
I think that's what's so exciting, isn't it? And we've been missing out on that, not being able to travel, about trying new dishes in the countries of origin. Now, tell me, as well as this wonderful breakfast from Hawaii, what other little tip did you take from this conversation in a room?
So we were talking about chocolate as an ingredient, and also as a savoury ingredient. And someone mentioned Cincinnati. I can never say it. Cincinnati.
Yeah.
It's a sort of chili sauce that they make. So it's got things like, so it's got the usual things like tomatoes and chilies, but it's got lots of spices, cinnamon and allspice. And then you add the addition of chocolate to it, and they serve it with spaghetti. And they often put melted cheese over that as well. So it does sound rather lovely. But it's a very, you know, it's a specialism of that part of America.
Mm.
And I really want to try it now. And so I've been looking up the recipes for it. I'd never heard of it before. So that's another thing to do on my list.
Well, what's coming out there and what you're talking about is not only layering of flavours, but layering of food. I think there's something so appealing about that, isn't it? I think that's probably why the burger has always been so popular. You know, the whole idea about you can layer cheese and bacon and salads and sauces, you know, and bring in so much more, gherkins, whatever, and the different bread. So this whole idea, we seem to like the layering from a texture point of view too, which can be so delightful. Now tell us, if we want to join in with this conversation, Paul, how do we go about it?
So at the moment it's a bit tricky because you have to have an Apple phone and you kind of have to be invited. I think I invited you, didn't I? I'm not sure if you've been on Clubhouse
I haven't
yet.
Been. No, you did invite me, but I didn't really know what it was about, to be perfectly honest with you. And so now I'm glad we've had the conversation because I did say yes. So what I haven't done, though, is enter into one of the rooms. But now that you've explained it, I will. So you have to be invited by somebody.
Yes, it's like being in a sort of private club, really. So you get an invitation by somebody and come in. And for the first week, you sort of wear a little party hat. And people see that, so they know you're a newbie. And so people encourage you to join in and chat. But you just enter these rooms, and it's fine just to listen as well.
Mm.
But you probably will be invited up to the stage at some point. And the little something flashes on your phone, and you get invited up, and then you're able to talk. But before you're invited, you're not able to talk. You're just able to listen.
It's very, gosh, there's always something new, isn't there, when it comes to social
yes.
media? Because, I mean, we've, you know, there was Facebook and now everybody's on Instagram and there's Twitter and we're all looking at our messages, you know. Oh, where did they message me? Was it WhatsApp? Was it Messenger? Was it a Gmail? Was it a... you know, we can have so many sources of being in communication with people. But it's quite exciting, this whole idea about, you know, the whole idea about being invited and the clubhouse and whatever. Who actually started it?
It was started in America, and I know a lot of the black communities started using it first. You know, that's where its basis is. But I think it was about 8 months ago, Stylist magazines did a feature on it, and it suddenly got very trendy, and all these celebrities started joining. And so some of the rooms are really, you know, there's basically people, quite influential, famous people giving talks, and people are listening. But a lot of the smaller rooms, it's very different, you know. So that's the sort of room we've got at the moment. Mm. But by turning up weekly, turning up daily, we're getting a sort of following, you know. We're getting regulars, which is quite lovely. So there's a real sense of community. And I'm gradually getting other people then joining in as well. So we're just going to keep going for a few more months and see what happens. But it's a lovely experience. It's you know, all those conversations, because I'm not able to go to the townhouse, which is where I had all these, originally I had all these lovely conversations with people about food. And this sort of replicates that online. So it's quite special.
Mm. Oh, that's wonderful. So, and the whole idea as well, too, that it's audio. So, you know, the intimacy of audio. And you really have to think when you're talking about food, I mean, as we do as well, too, about how you describe food whenever there aren't the pictures. And of course, you can signpost if you want to, but it's a good discipline, isn't it? Yeah. Just thinking about how you talk about all of that. Well, that's just delightful. So I'm going to join you in the clubhouse sometime, Paul. And I'm also going to be joining you in cooking some wild garlic. It's just my favourite thing. Just so simple, with either some linguine or spaghetti pasta. And there you have it. And a nice crisp bottle of white wine even. Or maybe a little Chianti, something like that. Absolutely delicious. Well, Paul, as always, it's a delight to catch up with you in the kitchen. And it won't be very long before we'll be able to actually be in a studio for real, face to face with real people tasting food around the record decks.
Yeah, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? Because I've missed that. It's very hard to share food when you're somewhere else. It's quite impossible, really.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah. And so that will be wonderful. So, Paul, thank you so much. You're listening to the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb with myself, Karen Morton, and Paul Couchman, who's otherwise known as the Regency Cook. And Paul, just remind everyone how they can see some more of your delicious recipes and photographs, please.
Yeah, so I've got my website, which is www.paulcouchman.co.uk, and on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, I'm known as the Regency Cook. And so if you just type that in any search engine, you'll come across me, hopefully, anyway.
Oh, that's great, Paul. Well, listen, I look forward to catching up for the next show and podcast, which for our listeners, every month we produce in the kitchen a fresh radio show for the Food and Drink Show. It goes out regularly on repeat then for the month on Radio Reverb. And we also have it up on a podcast, which you can get from all your favourite sources, whether it's Spotify or Apple iTunes. Thank you very much indeed, Paul. And thank you to you for listening to us here on the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.